Blog Talk Radio.
Hey.
Well, hey. How are you?
How's everybody doing?
I'm doing
oh,
right.
Man, I'm trying to maintain.
Hey, everybody.
What's going
on? Hey, Miss Tony.
Yeah, what's going on, y'all?
First off,
Phoebe, I want to know, how's your day? Is it a better day since this morning?
Yeah, I'm just impatient. I'm real impatient. Like if I'm waiting somewhere,
okay.
I'm supposed to be doing something, and I'm waiting for somebody, and I'm like, man, I could have did this. I wouldn't have been depending on somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of those
I know that
moments.
Feeling.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. You a boss. Bosses experience that from time to time. They have no choice but to pass over the duties to the worker and hope that the worker gets it right. Because when all else fails, it all falls back on who? The boss.
That boss.
That's right.
Hey, Mimi.
I'm going to give it to Tony.
How's everybody? You want me to get this show kicking, Miss Leisha?
Yes, ma'am.
All righty. Okay, we're going to get this show popping. This is the Wednesday night edition of Riding Ross Radio. We are so happy to be together once again. This is my favorite time of the week. For those that don't know, my name is Tony, and I am one of your co-hosts for this evening. And before I kick it over to my beautiful host, I'm going to pay the electric bill, that thing that keeps us on the air. I just want to remind everybody that Ms. Mimi Capri has some fabulous works out there. And those that follow her know that she's been a little MIA lately. So that means that she could about to drop a bomb on you guys. So I want to remind you that there's levels to this pizza. That's the P-Trap 1, 2, and 3. And da-da-da, 4 is right around the corner. You can believe that. She also has Tesla B-Series with the mighty pen of Cash, Street Lit Arthur. That's the 1, 2, and 3 series. That's a phenomenal series. So the Misfire with the pen, you got to pick those up. And for my phenomenal Master of Character Development, Mr. Aaron Ebo himself, he has quite a few stories that you might want to pick up. One is Cupid's Assassin and Bunches of Love, which is Cupid's Assassin Part 2. I Used to Love Her, which has become one of my hip-hop greatest. That's just for you, Debo, to put a smile on your face.
Thank you.
The G-Street Chronicles. And whoever has not known about this Till My Casket Drop phenomenon, you got to get those in your library. That one title, two great authors, two different books. Man, those guys did it with those. Those are just phenomenal reads. I really enjoyed both of them. And also, I forgot to mention Miss Nene Capri's Tainted under the G-Street Chronicles. So I am all over the place this season because I literally just walked through the door. So forgive my accentness. And I'm going to kick it over to the beautiful Miss Leisha. Hey, girls, give me a win.
Hey, everybody. This is Leisha. If you don't know who I am, I am the head of Writing Royalty Promotions, as well as the head promoter for Nene Capri and Boss Lady Publishing. We have a hot show for you today. But now I'm just so excited because this is actually part two of the Stop the Violence shows that we're doing, just to just get an idea of what's going on in the community. So I'm super excited. If you guys have not picked up Wahida Clark's new book, Blood, Sweat, and Payback, I'm telling y'all, pick it up. In the back of that book, there is a chapter. There are two chapters for the Thug Seven. So you get to pick which chapter, which way you want her to go. And then there's a number that you're going to text. And then you get to tell her that through text which version you want her to start with. So if you have not picked up that Blood, Sweat, and Payback, I suggest y'all pick that up. Don't forget, Nika Michelle, About That Life just dropped as well. Super excited for that. We also have the director with the pen, Mr. Aaron Bebo. Did you pick today?
No, I didn't. But somebody started cooking for me. That's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
Yes, it is.
So I'll still be nourished properly.
Absolutely.
That's what it's about.
I can't afford to miss no meal.
No, you can't. You're going to put it away. If Aaron misses a meal, we won't be able to find him.
Right. Well, he already got a fan club, don't he, Tony?
Oh, yes, he does.
He got a fan club. He got folks hot and vibing on Facebook. They've been posting about Aaron since the last show.
I'm glad they told y'all. I wish they tell me. All they got to do is go leave a review. I'll figure it out.
No, not that kind of review.
You don't want them to leave that kind of review.
No, not those kind of reviews.
I don't think you want that on Amazon.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, yeah, well, I don't know. If it ain't product related, then, yeah, they might not need to leave that kind of review on Amazon.
No, you don't want that.
It ain't product related. Well, it's a product, but it ain't a book.
They better. Hey, they need to stop leaving them type of reviews in your inbox too. Somebody can't read
no,
those
this
reviews.
This was in the group.
Somebody
no,
can't read that.
Hey,
whoa!
In the group.
Oh man! Somebody,
the whole
hey,
group.
Come
on. See, said, we. Did you see that? I said, see what? He said, I'm about to tell you kids.
That's what happens. That's what happens when they fall into the trap, Aaron. That's what happens. You've been hanging
See,
out with the
happens.
Trap. That's what happens.
That's
I
right.
I wish I knew what the trap was, because I don't know. Has anybody in there been talking about any book reviews they left in the group? Next time you go in there, could you mention book reviews to them when I come, if I happen to come up? You know, it's like, okay. Yeah. You know you need reviews, right?
Well, you know, Mimi is the master of trapping, so you've been hanging with her, so you have officially gotten trapped. Right, Miss Mimi Capri?
Yeah. Yes, that's right. And he's throwing them nets out there, and we don't know what might happen next. I'm going to be keeping my eyes peeled, though, because, you know, I got to watch my brother's back, make sure no one gets them. But, I'm happy that we're all a part of this great, great team. You know, people are talking about great reads, which is what this whole mission is about, is what Writing Royalty is about, getting the readers very, very, very informed about what's coming down the pike. We're blessed to be a part of G Street Chronicles. We have phenomenal stories coming out of that camp. He has I Used to Love Her Until My Casket Drops. He's working on a part two to I Used to Love Her, and some more heat that's going to drop this summer. I'm working on Tainted 2, and also some more heat that's coming up out of our corner. And we have so many great surprises for the readers. But one of the things that we really pride ourselves in is getting on the radio and putting our voice out there, putting our readers on to new authors and celebrities that are writing books, and getting that information with these hot, hot, hot topics. And tonight is very, very close to my heart because we're talking about stopping the violence. Me and my mom were talking before the show came on, and she was telling me about, you know, in Philly, you have the young man. He shot himself in the foot. He's 15 years old. He done got a hold of a gun and shot himself in the foot. So they arrest him and send him to jail for having an illegal weapon. I mean, every time you turn around. And Chicago, just last week, I think they had almost 40 shootings, and I think about 20 people were definitely either severely injured or killed. And then the following weeks, they had like 20, 11 people who were between injured and kill. And it's just out of hand. It's out of hand, out of control. In Trenton, New Jersey, they found the young man in, like, one of those garage settings. My dad was telling me this morning, with his hands tied behind his back, and he was shot in the head. They had found him. It's rampant, very, very rampant in our communities. Our children are being, you know, stalked upon, you know, and it's very, very, very hurtful. And, you know, to see that, you know, our children can't really play in the street like they want to. Like we could, Tony and Aaron, Leisha, I know you can remember those days where we could run and we could play hide and go seek for blocks and blocks and blocks. You know, you had that one base and then you could run around and hide behind cars and duck and dodge and you'd be playing all those little games until the streetlights came on. But everybody made it home. You know what I'm saying? Everyone made it home. But now, you know, a child going outside, a parent has to really pray, will their child make it back? Will their child make it back safely? And one, you know, our guest tonight, he's on California time. Hopefully he'll be on time. If not, we're going to continue to toss these ideas around for our guests, our callers, and our chat room. We're going to continue to toss these ideas, you know, around the gangs. It has gotten rampant. The young brothers don't really understand the original concept of the gang life, the gang mentality, how they first began. And you have them out here, you know, running around, doing different things, and just frivolous, you know, frivolous and purposeless. And it's just senseless killing, no protection of the community, no protection of the code. Aaron, I think you could speak on this. In our day, even, the dealers had some sort of code, you know, some sort of ethic where they wouldn't support a young boy on the block if they knew he was smart, if they knew his mother was struggling and trying to keep him in the house. They would say, you know, get your butt back to this town. You know, I don't want to be smarter than this. You know, go to school. We better not find you out here on this block. Now it's a total different mentality. Go ahead, Aaron.
They was buying the athletic equipment and stuff. Keeping you out and keeping you right out the streets. They was buying the athletic equipment, throwing bus trips, everything. Like it was real. It was a dope, totally different thing going on. Now the younger generation's killing each other next to nothing. Like it ain't even really nobody coming up out the sandbox together no more. Ain't no more that. Like it's like I
no honor.
My neighborhood. He live in my neighborhood, but so what? You know, like people, these kids know no other kid. Like I remember kids, you know, you used to go to other kids' house and play and all that. You can't do that now. Kids know you got something, man. They be ready to kill your mother, man.
Yes,
for real.
Yes, over nothing. Over maybe they saw a necklace on the dresser, or they saw you know her bringing a new television. When you watch the first 48. And one of the shows that had really touched my heart was a young mother who was working hard, and she was raising her son by herself, and they had found her in her house dead. And three gentlemen who she knew from the community who had, you know, knew that she had just got her income tax, she had just brought herself a laptop.
They broke in and took the TV and all that.
And killed
young
her. You know what I'm saying? Like,
young kid. She was young.
Yes. And they knew her. And they knew her. You know, most times people get killed by people that they know or associated with, you know, and it's sad. You know what I'm saying? Here you have a young woman who has lost her life. You have a child who no longer has a mother. And over something so minuscule, you know what I'm saying, something that another person could, you know, get a job and try to work hard to get for themselves, instead they're going to take the shortcut and take someone's life and get their things, and they can't enjoy any of it. Possibly
even take their life, too, because if they get arrested, mm-hmm. and, you know, plus mm-hmm. you guys just live with that anyway. Like, it's just crazy. It's ridiculous,
right.
man, the things people yeah. are doing. Now, the generation is definitely off the leash,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? It's sad. You know, the parents, I always say that. Like, a lot of people be hating when I say that, but it's like, really us. It's our fault. Like, the generation before this generation right here, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
you got these 32, 34-year-old grandmothers now and all that. Come on,
mm-hmm.
man. It's getting crazy. You know, it's no structure.
Yeah.
That means that my generation failed the one below me.
Right.
You know, like, I failed them because they not doing right. So that means I was doing wrong. Or the kids is going to follow what they see most around them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, yep. when they're young, they're impressionable. It'd be when they get to it'd be the adults that's hard to reach because they be set in their ways. They be thinking they already know what they know. And it's hard to really get mm-hmm. them to wave. The kids are very impressionable, and they'll follow, you know, what they see. And I know my generation was up there messing up. Yeah. My generation
yeah.
was out there messing
yeah.
up. Loud
yeah.
music.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This
you because said
all
it.
The rules my mother told me not to, that I knew I couldn't do in my mother's house, I took them
mm-hmm.
out elsewhere and was doing it around my kids. Proudly.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not
right.
really understanding what was going on. And it was a bunch of us that was doing that. And this is the effects of it. The effects of parents out there chasing behind drugs, leaving their kids alone. You got like a 6 or 7 year old right now coming home from school and got to take care of the 5 and 4 year old and the 3 year old. You know,
mm-hmm.
so that's how they ended up out corner at 8 or 9 years old.
Right.
They see what's going on. And they mom smoking. They ain't never no food in the house. You know, like it's crazy. So that's the generation that was left. And then, you know, maybe Mars wasn't smoking. Maybe she just run into the club every night. You know,
mm-hmm.
like different dudes stay up and about the apartment, the door getting kicked in. Kids remember things like that. 4 or 5 in the
mm-hmm.
morning, the door getting kicked in, SWAT running up in there. You know, like, that was a little, so that's the effects. And now we've seen it back. And some of us are older now, and we don't like to admit our part in it. We just like to say, oh, these kids are crazy.
Mhm. Yeah. And then, like you said, also, along with the fact of, you know, the parents being a part of that life, you also have the element of the parent who now has to work 2 jobs because the father is a part of that life, and now he's not in their life. Now he's locked up, and he's away. So now the mother has to work 2 jobs. There's no supervision. You know, it's no more big mama. You know, back in our day, you always had a big mama. Even if she wasn't your personal grandmother, she was an older woman who was in the community that you could take a child to their house and they ate and they drank mm-hmm. and they could lay down until she finally got in from work or whatever. You know, they would even keep them for a couple of days. Oh, your mama going to be working the whole weekend, baby. You're going to be right here with me. You know what I'm saying? They had a cooking. You know, some square meals and giving some sound advice and passing on some of that tradition, some of that culture, you know, what was left of it. You know, she may have been a God-fearing woman or try to drag you off to the church or, you know, just give you some type of basis, you know, something you can hold on to. Now is do it for the vine, you know, do it for the vine. Kids,
right.
Yeah.
John Creighton and you know, popping their behinds and stuff at these very young age. I saw one other day, it was a young boy. So now they're going from the little girls to the little young boy. So now he's over there gyrating and carrying on. And they forget that you have social predators, you have online predators who cruise the internet, you know, looking for these types of videos and things so that they can prop them up on their television and get their jollies off of them. You know, they can prop them up on their computers and things, and here it is, you thinking that, oh, I'm just posting pictures of my child, and I think this is funny or cute or whatever. You have somebody who is not all the way wrapped tight,
mm-hmm.
exploiting young children. And, again,
yeah.
that comes from a bad generation.
Bad generation. You see, you be seeing the mothers fighting now. I mean, by taping the kids fighting and stuff.
Yeah.
Not breaking it up or not. And they ain't intervening as an adult. They intervening like, yo, my kid's losing. Hold up. You know, like, it's crazy, man. It's like it seemed like a whole generation skipped.
It is. It's crazy, and it's sad because you can't do nothing about it. Go ahead, Alicia. I'm sorry. Go.
No, I was going to say we had incidents on the news where two young boys got to fighting, and they was tearing up the classroom. It was here in Detroit. And the teacher, I guess her walkie-talkie wasn't working, so she couldn't call for security. She wanted somebody to come, so the only thing she had was a broom. And she started beating the boys with a broom to break them up. And they fired her. But this is the thing. Had she not did anything, and one of those boys were severely hurt, she would have been in trouble because she didn't do anything. She did the only thing that she could do to break up that fight, and they had the boy's mom on TV showing where he was hit with the broom. And my thing is, you should be glad she hit him with the broom because he ain't had no business fighting at school no way.
Hmm.
It's just that, you know, the kids don't think, the parents don't think, everybody just going all willy-nilly doing whatever they want to do with no self-control, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And the thing is that you have whole communities lost, whole communities. It used to be where it might be isolated to a certain area. You knew that you could only go to this place or that place to do this certain particular thing. Now it's everywhere, you know, and the children have to walk past, you know, all of these various of areas to get to the playground, to get to the school, you know, even if it is an after-school program or what so have you, what they have to pass through to get to these outlets so they don't fall victim. It's so saturated with violence and anger and hate. And now I saw on the news two different incidents where they're taping razor blades to the park equipment. They did it in California. Yeah. They put razor blades in the grass. Two young boys got cut up really bad. On this side, I think it was Philly, they had taped the razor blades to playground equipment, and someone saw them, and the cops had to come and do a sweep and try to get them off of the playground equipment. But I'm like, who is, you know, has the time to take razor blades to an area where children play? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, you know, it's no honor. You know, in our day, if you had a beef or a gripe with somebody, you went to that person and you had the beef and the gripe with them. Now it has come to a time where you have people who are cowards.
Social media junkies.
Yes, they want to stay 5 minutes of fame. They don't know how to handle anger or disappointment. You know, you had the young boy who the girl told him, "I'm not going to the prom with you." So he choked her out, pushed her down the stairs, stabbed her in her neck, and she died. Because he has no way of dealing with disappointment or anything like that. So you have a lot of different examples of how our children are growing up in this day and time with such violent tendencies, even with the video games. I, for one, don't promote the video games, the violent ones, because, for one, what it does is it desensitizes children. Here it is, you have a video game. We talked about this in my psychology class. And within this video game, people die and they come back. And you die and you come back. And what that does is it desensitizes children to death. And they had two children that they talked about in a case study where one of the young boys was watching playing the game. And he got up from the game. He went to where he knew the gun in the house was, and he shot and killed his 80-year-old grandmother. Little boy, totally desensitized about the taking of a life and the consequences of such. And also with movies, when young children and young people watch movies, I always say that they show a false perception of life and death. Even say, for example, you're watching Fast and Furious, for example, and the cars are going through the street, you're in the movies, you're like, yo, that's so exciting. And you're watching cars flip all upside down, land on other cars, drive into areas where people are standing and sitting. And I'm saying to myself, oh, it's all fun and games because you think that it's portrayed in a movie. However, if these was real-life situations, people would be in those vehicles. People would be, you know, standing on those corners and different things like that. And life would really be lost. You know what I'm saying? But because the good guy or the bad guy gets away, the person you're rooting for gets away, they get away with the money, they get away with the girl, they get away from the system, they beat the system, it puts a false sense of paying for crime and paying for your actions. And I think that we have to have a system put in place that does a whole lot better to what we portray to these children. Case in point, they had a situation when you're talking about accidents the day, what is that, Philly, two cars, one guy cut off another person, and then the two cars collided, came up on a sidewalk, a young guy was walking there. He tried to jump on the red light pole to be safe, and they hit the pole, knocked him in the pole over the bridge. So he's fighting for his life. But it's just stuff like that that happens in real life where people are really affected, and it's not shown enough to children to show them that there's real, you know, there's real pain, there's real agony from, you know, mistakes and different things that we make, people flying through the streets and doing reckless things and messing up the communities, you know, messing up the communities. That's what we're talking about tonight, stopping the violence in the community. Aaron?
Yeah, and you got to watch for the program, like you're talking about with the TV. You gotta watch the programming, how they program up, and not even so much the pro. If you go and watch TV, like you gotta be watching with a watchful eye. You gotta be watching how certain people view us. They'll show you,
yeah,
as they're depicting it on TV. Like they'll show you how they really view you, as opposed to how you may really be living. You know, and
right.
You gotta be very, you gotta be very, you know, keen on those images. Like the study of African-Americans have changed by large now because they're not studying us how they used to before. They used to study us mostly through the women and children, because the women would be on the welfare system, the kids would be in the public school system, and they'd be asking both of them a series of questions that they really ignorant to, and they would just give an honest answer. So they would just start assuming what the black community was thinking by large. But now all that's over. You got all these charter kids, these charter schools. The welfare system is getting cut totally into almost nothing. So people have to learn now, and that's what's going on, is that we're at this day and age where I'm really starting to see a lot of people do not want to learn or think anymore. They just want everything quick. No one wants to take the time to think. And that's a big part of what's going on in the community, too.
And you know what, Aaron? It even goes beyond when you talk about, you know, those earlier days of the study of the women and the children. It really goes back to what they call in slavery times the seasoning period, where before slavery was actually implemented and practiced, they grouped the people into one area. And in that one area, they were able to study how we loved, how we raised our children, our traditions, our culture. And they realized that one of the greatest things that they would have to do to us to break us was to separate us from one another, separate the man from the household, separate the mother from the child, come between that love, that strong bond that we had to hold on to during that period in time. And it's the same now. You know, all of our men are locked up. You have, you know, you don't have men in the household. The men that you do have in the household, they didn't have men in their households, so they don't really know how to raise a man, how to cultivate a woman child, how to put forth a good example. You know, everything is discussed in front of children. Like, in our day, you better not be caught nowhere near an adult conversation. You know, nowadays it's like, okay,
in their mouth.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you're going to a room and they're talking to the child. I've seen grown women having conversations with their younger child about their man and what they're doing and stuff. I'm like, my pressure just goes straight up and my heart goes out to that young child because, I mean, nobody believes in a mystery of conception or anything. However, I'm not going to sit down and have that conversation with my 13-year-old. We're just not going to do that.
Right.
You know, you have to have some sort of standard, some sort of code. So within all of that, it perpetuates the violence and the anger that's in the communities because then they turn outward. Instead of being able to go to your mother, go to your elders within your own household, now they're turning to their peers, people who are a little older than them for advice and nurturement when they should be using the people, you know what I'm saying, the parents and the aunties and the grandparents to give them those morals and that guidance. Tony?
And I was going to chime in as far as breaking up that family bond. And those families that are on family, you know, government assistance, they don't actually give you assistance if there's a man in the house. You know, so in order for you to receive monthly money to try to take care of your family, you can't have that man in your house. So there's another way of stripping that man away from his family.
Definitely. And you need it. I mean, go ahead, Aaron.
That's why the study was mainly on the women and children, because they wasn't letting the man be involved. Like they knew the man couldn't go down to those neighborhoods and apply for work realistically and get any type of job because it's an inferior thing. Like he don't got the education it takes to get this work or to do what, you know, they need done down there. And then eventually, the woman, the feed is going to be, this man can't take care of his kids, but I can. Come get on my system. Get rid of him.
Yeah.
Like that movie Claudine. Remember that movie Claudine back in the day? She was going with the garbage man, and they was hiding him when the welfare lady used to be coming through checking the crib. Yeah, that's all real.
They had to hide
the iron. They used to come to the crib. Yep.
They had to hide the toaster.
Yeah, they got to hide
like,
things. You're
on welfare, and you can't even buy toast? What are you saying? I can't have toast because I got food stamps? I can't iron my clothes? I can't have toast? Like, you know, like what kind of shenanigans is that? Forcing shame. You know what I'm saying? It's just like forcing shame and belittlement, you know what I'm saying, upon people, and it gets into the very fiber of the human being, you know what I'm saying? Because you put those types of things on a woman when she's pregnant, she sees all of this, she has these feelings and emotions releasing, you know, through her hormones, through her chemicals, through the DNA, through the blood. Those then go into the unborn child. You know, you ever see, you know, you see a child and you like, they don't look like nobody else, but they look like their great-grandfather. You know, you're like, you don't know who this child looks like or who this child act like. And they say, boy, you act just like your great-granddad because those genes are passed. And if you have fear, if you have hate, if you have anger, if you have lack of anything, that lack of is in those genes, is in that DNA. It passes on generation after generation after generation. And now we're at a point where it is definitely out of control. Like I say, I'm watching my friends bury their children. There's no way that a 35, 40-year-old mother should be burying 2 and 3 and 4 sons. You know, she got 5, 6, 7 kids, and she's burying 3 of her sons and her, you know what I'm saying, maybe even her daughter, losing them, you know, to the street. You know, I'm like, we was just in high school together. Now I'm standing at your child's funeral. Like, it should be like that. You know, they supposed to bury us. They supposed to be ready to put us down, you know, at a ripe age. But no, women are growing up, and they're going to grow up into their late ages, and they're only going to have grave sites to visit, you know, graves to sit and put wreaths on and let balloons go every year. You know, that should not be a part of a mother's yearly, monthly, daily activity. you know, your daily mm-hmm. activity should be picking up that phone, calling your child and saying, you okay, everything good, how was work today, how was school, you know, and so forth. Can't wait for those grandchildren to come back over. You know, those types of conversations, not you're sitting with your friends and you need some counseling because you done buried, you know, your only child or several children.
Uh-huh.
Tony, so you have sad. Those young boys. Isn't it sad? Go ahead.
It is. It's just so sad, you know, when you're put in that type of situation, you know, even like those times when they get on your nerves, that's like the best time. Those are the times that you remember the most. You know, like, do you remember when he got on my nerves, he did so-and-so? You know, those are
mm-hmm.
those are history-making times, you know, the good
right.
and the bad.
Right, right,
it,
exactly.
It's sad.
It is sad, and I don't see where we're going next with it. You know what I'm saying? What's going to happen next? With this generation, after, you know, these so many years of pain and hurt. So,
mm-hmm. I think that there's no, like, respect with this generation. And first and foremost, that, you know, because I don't want to see to have people look down at me or think negative of me. You know, I always try to be positive and portray a positive attitude because that rubs off, you know.
Yeah,
I care about the way people perceive me because that's just who I am. It's ingrained in me, you know. But there's
right.
no self-respect with young children today. Like
uh-huh.
people said, everything they want everything quick. It's the, like
yeah.
this microwave,
yeah. the microwave era. I'm telling you, that's what,
mm-hmm.
that's what it is. Microwave era. Like
mm-hmm.
they don't even know nothing about the oven, or even the house phone. I was just thinking that earlier. Like we all guilty though. Like we all walk around. We got these house phones. I mean our phones on our hips every minute. So it's really no time to think. It's not like before. No anticipation of life anymore. Everything in life is moving so fast. Before if you wanted to talk to somebody, you might have to wait till you get home. Now you can text them.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can call. You know what I mean? It's just too fast. People living life too fast. You know,
mm-hmm.
you got to slow down and think and relax and get into yourself and get to know people more and better communication. Like, I really don't even
mm-hmm.
like texting. I don't even like when people text me. It's like it's so impersonal. Like, you done pressed all these numbers, and you could have just pressed one and called me and talked to me. Nah, but it was like, that'd be my whole concept on that. So I'd be like, a lot of times I hear text, I'd be like, I'm not even looking at that. There's somebody who don't know me.
But
and
unfortunately,
then, you know,
the children can't even have a face-to-face conversation with each other because they're constantly looking down at their phone, but they don't
mm-hmm.
know how to hold a conversation. They're so used to click, click, clicking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down. Get to know your neighbor. Get to know your classmate. Get to know your friend. Speak. Let someone hear your voice. Let you hear your voice. You know,
right.
they don't know how to hold a conversation.
Yes.
So much for that
Tony, you said it. Tony said it right there, let you hear your voice. I agree with
mm-hmm.
that. And
mm-hmm.
in saying that, I'm going to go with Chad over to the side with this conversation. I came to my daughter's room, and she was on her phone doing whatever it is she does. And it was a special on, what is that, the Disney or whatever, like Nick or whatever it was. And they were telling the children about this sex thing. And I was like, what is this on your television? So she was like, I ain't even paying that no mind. So she had her headphones, listening to music. She got a lot going on. But I stood there for a minute and watched. And I'm listening to these young adults talk about sex things. And they're saying how great it was. And one girl said, it was just as gentle as I expected my first time to be. And so forth and so on. What the heck is going on? And they passing out sexting rules, like if you're going to be sexting, don't sext while you're doing this or that, and make sure you're sending it to the right person, and make sure that you know, you don't show your face, and you know, show your body, don't show your face, and different things. They're giving out these hint, clue, and you got these young adults, and they're clearly teenagers, and they're talking about how great sexting is, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like, back in our day, if you touch somebody's hand or leg or you chase them, you know, you had the little games and you could cut somebody, you know, and run and play. That was a whole different ball game. Now they're actually passing out instruction on how you should sext, you know, each other. And you have these young women who are pretty much degrading themselves. And then you get them in a situation where their pictures and stuff are being passed around. And then their reputation is ruined. Again, the anger. You perpetuating that anger. You know, going through the communities, you have young women who now are growing up ashamed, embarrassed, or taking on a false sense of pride because now they have to pretend that it doesn't bother them, pretend that it's okay, it's all right. Hey, yeah, I did it, and what? You know, that type of attitude. And it's like, wow, you know what I'm saying? So that's just sad. You know, it's sad, and it's bothersome to me that, you know, that – types of things are happening, you know, within our community, which perpetuates the violence. You have young women who cannot communicate, who cannot talk, who cannot verbalize. The first thing they'll do is hit because they have no, like you said, no communication skills or anything like that. We're going to take this caller right quick and see what they have to say, get them to chime in on this conversation. 570-540, you're live in the Right and Royalty Clubhouse.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. This is Keisha.
Hey,
I'm a loyal supporter.
Hi. I just have a couple of things to say. I guess I'm going to quote my favorite rapper, Tupac, when he said, I was given this world, I didn't make it. With me saying that is that I think that the black community, we took honesty out. When we took honesty out of the situation, we became a lie. I'm saying that because when we was in the 80s, we had that commercial, this is your brain's on drugs. But in the 80s, everybody was doing drugs. So the kids then were saying, I don't know, my friends were saying, well, look, my father's smoking weed. He told me not to smoke weed, but he's smoking weed. So they got that attitude, man, he's lying. Well, I'm going to go ahead and lie. I'm going to do what I want to do because now I don't trust him. And I don't trust my mother either because she's doing crack. So when they raised their kids, they was too honest and turn to a lie. Like, I'm going to teach little man how it really is. But he's only 1 year old. He only 3. So how can we call a woman a bee or smoking a hole in a gun? It's the truth for him. So when you start doing that, then your whole way you look at life started to change. So after we was lost, I remember they calling us Generation X. When I was growing, I remember teachers saying, well, y'all Generation X. Now we calling these kids microwavable. So it's like a cycle. And we got to be honest with them and just, we got to sit back and just be honest. Being honest don't mean telling your 3-year-old about sex. Being honest is saying, I'm the parent, and at 3 years old, you don't even have to worry about sex. So I'm going to be the parent. I'm going to go to the school, and the school knows that, no, you're not going to teach that to my child at 5 years old because I said, no, I'm the parent. We doing this together. So you need to come inside the classroom and pass our cookies because you're not going to be able to do that. Back to what Alicia was saying, that's another lie with that teacher. Now, if that teacher don't want them 2 kids to fight, her hitting with the broom ain't helping the situation because I'm sure she could have had a student go to another classroom with other choices. So when you want to teach a child something, you can't teach them by giving them violence too. You can't hit them with the broom. You know, y'all shouldn't have been fighting, so I used the broom on you. Huh? The same way you want to teach them, you can't stop something. That's why those 2 students are fighting. How are you teaching them something? So we got to, it's going to be a hard situation, but right is right, and you got to teach a child sometimes, like, you know, I'm going to show you how it's done. You want your child to make that right. Somebody give me a nerve in a situation, you can make A and B, C choice. But once you get, because I'm not going to lie, you hit my child with a broom and I see a mark, you need to get fired. Because nobody
should ever
be better.
I'm going to say this in that respect, you know, from working in the Philadelphia school system for a couple of years with the children, they have a total different mentality these days. You have these teachers are very afraid of these children because it's like you say something to a child and a parent show up and they offer you into the street. And it's like, are you serious? Like, I am trying to help.
Mm-hmm. The schools are very afraid too. So you can't tell a child, well, we don't want you to hit each other, but you hitting them. Because it's not going to get nowhere. Like at my daughter high school, them kids, they cutting arms off and stuff. One teacher knocked the student out. You can't do that. What that boy going to do? He's like, well, you know, he knocked me out. He's going after school, going to see that teacher. He embarrassed you, knocked him out. I don't care if you're a teacher. You can't teach him how violence with violence. It's not going to help him.
No, it's not. It's crazy, but, you know, we got a lot of work to do, and everybody has to be on the same page to try to get this work done. Yep. But this violence in the community is rampant. But other than that, thank you, teacher, for chiming in and, you know, sharing this with us so that we could, you know, look at those aspects of that violence. So, you know, the kids are away from you all day. And that happening, they're learning different things and different things is going on with them. And because of that violence continues on. Yes. Thank you, Ms. Keisha, for calling in. We appreciate your input as always.
Thanks, Keisha.
All right. So we have me, you, and Ms. Tony on here. Aaron had to step off into hair and makeup. Our guest is running a little late. I do have
our
a hand up. Let me see if
our
that
is
on
the line,
guest.
Meanie.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm going to
on
take
the line.
Okay, because it's not showing up. I only have one. Let me see if this is him. Hello, is this Haki?
Yes, this is Haki, sister.
Ah, okay.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. I've been listening. I've been here since 4 o'clock my time on the West Coast.
All right. I was looking, and your phone number was coming up as all ones, which is something we try to stay away from on the radio because sometimes those are prank calls. So maybe because it's a landline, it came up that way. I apologize. I kept saying, where is he? But, you know, we're honored to have you on the show this evening. We know that you have a very diverse background in the streets. We're going to let you tell the story because I'm quite sure you can tell it best.
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely going to let you enlighten our callers, our listeners, on who you are, your background out there in the streets. And then we're going to talk about those different changes that you have watched over the years happen with this violence in our community. And then we're going to go right into what we can do or what we see to stop this violence. Brother Haki?
All right. Well, I'm Brother Haki. I'm from the West Coast, from the Bay Area, but also lived in Watts. My background, like I said, is very diverse. I'm a former gang leader. I'm actually a founder of my own set, which is called Bounty Hunter, Bellhaven Bounty Hunter Bloods. I've moved past that. I've went and graduated from college. I have two bachelors, one in African studies and one in philosophy. I've done time. I've done over 16 years behind the wall. And by me being who I was in gangs, I never been in a level one, two, or three, or four prison. They always put me behind the wall in the toughest prisons. So I came to San Quentin, Pelican Bay. Then in the feds, I came to El Reno. Then in Georgia, I came to Hayes. And so they always try to put me in the worst areas. I've overcome that and still turn my life around. I'm doing work with inner city youth when I can. Sometimes they don't want me because I won't work on their terms. But I also presently do my thing by teaching MMA, kickboxing, and boxing. But I'm also the author of two books that I'm looking to get published real soon. Hint, hint, Nene.
Yes.
outside of that, I got into the gang culture because my dad was killed when I was 9 years old by a gang member, by a Crip. So when anti-Crip gangs or groups, because we didn't even call them gangs back then, we just called them different parts of the hood or just different groups. It was people outside gave us names, but when anti-Crip groups came up, I was with it because I had that anger because they killed my dad. But I learned how to channel that anger and realized that by me killing another brother is not homicide. It's actually suicide because I'm killing a piece of my strength. And it took me a long time for that to sink in. And it wasn't overnight. It came through different revelations, different epiphanies, and meeting different people in my life, everywhere from Dr. Khaled Muhammad, Minister Farrakhan, Dr. York, Milana Karenga. It took a lot of things also personally happened to me for me to actually realize this, you know. So by me having children and having grandchildren and just realizing that, hey, it has to stop. So from there, I'm on the right track, and I'm not looking ever to go back to that way again, and just moving forward from here on, you know. And I was listening to the conversations about respect and parents and a lot of stuff like that. I see a lot of brothers now and sisters join gangs or what are called gangs now is because they lost respect for their parents. But they lost respect for their parents because their parents lost respect for them. You know, you got young guys growing up now when their mom, you know, doing some guy in the next room for a piece of crack. Or their father being disrespected by the local drug boy. So these youngsters lose respect for those parents because their parents less respect for them. And I see that a lot. So when we're in that era of video images, you know, the clothes, the bling, that's the only way they can get a girlfriend. So they start hustling. And if they start hustling, you just get where I'm from, you just can't get a sack and start hustling. You guys, it's a protocol. It's a chain of command. So therefore, they join on, and unfortunately, some of the older brothers exploit that and use them as foot soldiers to come in. But it all had rules. It all had some type of protocol. Now it's pretty much wow, wow, what's out there? You know, you do what you just go for what you know, but still, there is a form of respect. You know, and when I came into the culture, we came in to clean up the community. We came in to protect the community off a group that had went wild. So, you know, bounty hunters, when we came, we weren't even called bounty hunters then. We were called green jackets because we used to wear army jackets, you know. And then we later on from the 1972 Alliance, Blood Alliance, then we came forth and came into the into Alliance and became Bloods. But us ourselves, we always had a consciousness of our community. We were called Brothers and Sisters of the Panthers, and some of the media called Bloods the Bastards of the Panthers because we had that. We had that chain of command. We had those. We had rules, you know. And me, myself, before I can even start my set, I had to finish high school and enter college. So, therefore, I heard the brother speaking earlier about sometimes you would come on a block and brothers would kick you off the block. That's the kind of culture I came into. And I still kick young kids off the block who I see that are talented. I'd kick them off the block, you know. But now we don't have nobody really doing that. You know, because now we got the West Coast, the East Coast. Now we got the South who all mixed up. don't have a clue what's going on. Yeah. So now you got more Bloods fighting Bloods now. And when I was coming up, that was, like, really unheard of. But because most Crips who I know, and I know a lot of them, most of them go their whole gangbanging career and never have had another beef. Excuse me, and never have had a beef with a Blood. So now you got Bloods doing the same thing as the Crips were doing. So, you know, it's really wild out there. But, you know, like I say, we have brothers who would pull your coat. You know, I had actually police come to me and tell me, go to school, join the military, or go to jail. Because I know what you did back then. or I know what you did back when. You know, so now we got nobody's pulling in anybody's coattails now. But now you got a lot of brothers who I grew up with. A lot of them are passed away. A lot of them are in jail. But a lot of them went on to become teachers, politicians, business owners, and even police officers, you know. And you know, I was just telling my son a couple of months ago, San Francisco police officers starting out between $88,000 to $104,000 a year coming out of academy.
Uh-huh.
I don't like it, but hey, if I was young again, I would probably think about that, you know. But moving on, it's just like there's no respect now. There's no guidelines. There's no protocols. You know, you know, brothers coming into the community and, you know, we don't have anybody helping out anymore, you know. And now we, you know, this may sound a little strange, but we got a lot of brothers out here who are just looking for an opportunity to come into the community. But you have other brothers who are going to exploit that and come into the community. And, you know, like I said, what I mean by coming into the community, you got a sister that's raising raising some sons, right? And she needs a male role figure or a male role model. We need brothers to come into the community and help the sister go down to get a car, help the sister or show the young brother how to fix something in the house, or when they're doing this without trying to sex the sister. Because a lot of brothers come in without ulterior motives, and that ain't cool. But now, we got now even the job trends that have really shifted. Back in the days, most job trends were pretty much physical, and brothers used to, you know, really pride themselves in, yeah, I can do this, I can lift this, I can do that, because most of the jobs are physical. But now, most of the jobs are technical. Now, with that shift changing from physical to technical, most of the brothers don't have the good jobs no more. Most of the sisters have the good jobs now. Now, most of the sisters are the breadwinners. And this, some brothers who don't understand this trend, who used to control the sisters with the money, they no longer holding the breadwinners anymore. The sisters are breadwinners, and now they feel slighted, and they feel how can you say, they feel inferior. So now, since they can't control the sister with the money, well, now they want to hit the sister. But it's all out of a lack of understanding and a lack of respect for one another. So we got to understand why things are the way they are. You know, and then some of this is lost in that independent woman thing, and don't realize when you get in that independent woman thing, sometimes it pulls them away from the brothers. I know I went off from the original subject, but, you know.
No, it all plays a very intricate part in the violence in the community, and that in-home violence, that domestic violence is one of the beginnings of it, and it really has come full circle, Brother Haki, when you look at where domestic violence within our communities first started when, you know, slavery was abolished, so they say, and then you had them taking the jobs away from the black male and giving the jobs to the female, giving her the domestic duties of the home. Then you had it where the black male would say, well, I can't get any work here. I'm going to go 3, 4, 5 towns over. I have to go to the next state to get work. So now he's leaving the household, okay? He's roaming away from the household, which does happen. And then, like you said, that inferior feeling, you know, they knew exactly how to break the household, give the woman the job. She's bringing the money in. And the black woman has always been very strong, strong-minded, strong back, strong morals, always held down, you know, the household, always held down not just the man in her house, but she also had to succumb to the advances of every male she passed, you know, in that day and time. And all of that made the black male have those feelings of, she doesn't belong to me, she's not mine, I can leave this area or this place or whatever. They put her in a stronger role than we talked about now with the welfare system, where the woman can't even say that she has a man to just be able to get, you know, medical. You know what I'm saying? It might not even be the food stamps or the cash. It might just, I need medical. I'm working, but I don't have medical benefits on my job. I need to have medical for my children because, first of all, they're not going to give you anything if you make $1, 1 cent over what they claim is the quota. So now she just needs to be able to take her children to the doctors, to the, you know, to everyone. They're going to ask her 500 questions. Where is he? And this, that. And it forces women to not put babies' fathers on birth certificates. Like, yo, I'm going to need this medical right after this baby is born. Like, I can't even put you on a birth certificate. You know, so, you know, it makes it so that it cuts that family, that very fiber, and you separate. You know, you separate the man from his woman. And then you separate him from his children, where he can't be a man to his woman, he can't be a father to his child. Again, leaving those children out there to have influences of whatever is going on in the community without no real guidance. And you have this horrible violence. Kids can't even have a decent conversation. Like, in our day, we were talking about how you could do the dozens. Like, we could sit and do the dozens for hours and your mother this and your cousin that. And, again, that was something else that was used during, you know, slavery times, the dozens or, you know, the hiking, cracking jokes or what have you to pass the time, to keep some laughter going. Everybody went home and went on about their business. Now children have become so sensitive. You can't say anything to a child. They get a pencil and stab you, get the scissors and stab you, wait for after school, get a gun, get a knife. You know, do anything, you know, to try to ease that pain, that hurt, you know. What do you think about that, Brother Hakeem?
I agree with you totally, and it has to do also, we go back to the lack of understanding, okay? If we understand why things the way they are, we can move past them. It's like on the slave ship. Someone spoke earlier about slave ships. The reason they separated the man and woman on the slave ship was not because of the man doing anything to the woman, is because in the presence of the woman, the slave masters couldn't do what they can do to the brothers to anybody on the ship, because the brothers' pride was at stake, and the sisters would look at them like, "You gonna let them do this?" So they had to separate the man and the woman on the slave ship. And the communities are pretty much ran like slave ships, so if you separate the man from the woman, they are both are easier to control. But it also,
yeah, and
right now, we're living in an age some people say a lost generation, the worst generation ever of youth. I will actually dispute that, because history shows when you have a youth that just don't give a F, just don't care, I mean, that angry youth, if you can get someone to rally that youth behind them for change, change can happen. It happened in Kenya with Jomo Kenyatta. It happened. Who rallied behind Dr. King? The youth. Who rallied behind Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana? The youth. C.K. Duke. I mean, if you can go on and on, every great revolution had an angry youth behind them. So if we can get youth to rally behind someone who has good, positive messages and is going to actually stick to that, we got the best generation ever upon us right now, but we just don't know how to harness it.
Exactly. I agree 100%. Because this is a generation that is fearless, that who have courage, even though, you know, we have, you know, the negativity within this generation, or the negativity that has been cast upon them. They have a heart of a lion. You know, they have they're fearless, and I think that is the fear, and then because of that fear, you have the drugs pushed in the community to numb. To dumb down that fearlessness, to dumb down that courageousness, to dumb down that you know, not having a fear to speak out, you know, to speak against. Because if you sit and talk to some of these young children, like, their ideas are phenomenal, but with a drink and a joint later, they done forgot all about what they was that they were talking about. You know what I'm saying? And even with the young brothers who do indulge in the marijuana or what so have you, a lot of them will sit and talk to you and build on these great ideas. but they don't have, like you said, a great leader, a great mind. Our generation was blessed. My father is a little older than you, and he comes from that generation of great thinkers, you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You know, you had your Malcolm X, you had, your, you know, the Farrakhan, you had, you know, your Amira Baraka, you had great revolutionary minds. You know, you had people right out of the Panthers and different groups, the Pan-African groups, different groups. Du Bois started that Niagara movement where you had great thinkers and you had people to pattern after. In this day and time, the great thinker is Rick Ross and 2 Chainz, and they're like, boy, did you hear what he had to say? You know what I'm saying? And there's no sustenance because when the music goes off, the lights go out.
Yes. I agree 100%.
And that's a sad day. Where we have Miss Alicia. Alicia, how do you feel about that?
Alicia, I absolutely agree. No, I'm just coming out of here. I absolutely agree. I think that especially with today's youth, and I'm not going to even say today's youth. I'm going to say blacks in general. We are the most creative race. And we are absolutely the smartest race, but we are so unorganized when it comes to doing certain things. And I think that when it comes to our youth, they can be and do whatever they want to be and do. I had a class, and I remember a teacher saying that she didn't believe in telling the kids that they can do whatever they want to do or be whatever they want to be in life, and I disagreed with her. It was in my sociology class, and I disagreed with her because they have so many different opportunities and programs, and yes, the parents, they have to seek those programs out, but they are there. And though these kids can do so much, they can be so, they don't have to be rappers. They don't have to be athletes. They can be lawyers. They can be doctors. But they have to have somebody pushing and cheering them on and putting them in those positions. And I don't think that a lot of people want them to do those things. You know, it's unfortunate because even like with teachers, you know, you have parents that push the kids at home, and at school, if the kids are messing up, like, for example, a sixth grader, if they're messing up, the teacher's like, oh, it's just sixth grade. So the kid is like, oh, it's just sixth grade. But it's like they don't teach them the importance of sixth grade is important. Seventh grade is important. This is all important. But they don't do that. They don't push these kids like they should. And I think it kind of contradicts sometimes what the people are doing at home at the same time, because if you're pushing your kid at home and then they get to school and it's like, oh, it's just, you know, oh, it's just to see. Bloomberg, he had, in the sixth grade, he had all these and that, but it was like, it's like you can't give them that type of vision. You can't tell them, oh, this is a millionaire, and this millionaire had all D's and F's, oh, and now they're a millionaire, because their steps are not going to be ordered the same way. So I absolutely, you know, I agree with that. What do you think, Tony?
I agree also, and back to what Nene and our guests were saying about this being one of our greatest generations because of their fearlessness. If you sit down and look at all the things that these young children do as far as, like, cracking codes, getting, you know, when they infiltrate these big company systems and getting
hacking.
All these passwords, hacking, that's the word I'm
hacking.
Saying. If they would put that to a positive thing and put it, do something more useful, there's so many places that they can go. You know, and I also agree with when you push your children at home and you find something that they're passionate about, you know, case in point, my husband and I, whatever our children were passionate about, we all supported it. We supported it as a family. And until it ran its course, you know, we stuck with it. And, you know, if you want to do this, we're going to be committed to it. You got to be accountable. And accountability is something that's lacking with our generation, our young generation today. They're not being held accountable for their actions. And that's the word in my household, accountability.
Yes, I agree. How do you feel, Brother Hakeem? I want to ask you about the early days. They sat down and came up with the concept of the Bloods or the, you know, the Crips. What was the initial mindset of where they were going? Because our young brothers today, they think that it's about just going out there and, you know, shooting up this part of the community or that part of the community and taking over. What, can you please just give us a little history on what was the initial idea of the gangs in the community?
Okay, well, like I say, I came out of a inspiration of a group who started because the Crips had turned on the community. Now, the Crips came along when you had the Mexican gangs and white gangs in L.A., right? Then as the white gangs pretty much faded out and then the Mexican gangs settled into themselves, the Crips turned on the community. So you had what we call anti-Crip gangs who came in to protect the community from the Crips. But yet they didn't want to join the Panthers or anything, so therefore we started our own neighborhood protection and cleanup groups. And this is what we would do. And then we would pull our monies together and help sister so-and-so with a light bill, help sister so-and-so with rent, or we would give rent parties, and everything was more of a community-minded. So it was not bent on revenge and getting this person just because they wore a different color. That later came on and spent out of control. But then after the crack era came in, it was about money. You know, everyone pooled together and organized things, but the original concept was to protect the community and to help the community help itself. And like the, we had examples then. I know we had like Huey Newton, Geronimo Pratt. I know on the East Coast they had a brother by the name of Father-in-law, Clarence Lokine, who was phenomenal with the youth. But now we have the lack of male leadership or the lack of male role models in the community. And we always had somebody in the community who would check us, who would pull our coats if we went too far to the left. But the concept was not getting another brother because of a color or getting that. And the only reason we chose the color red because it was opposite of blue. And we called each other Blood. And it's so amazing. Now, I ask youngsters now, why are you a Blood? Where did the word Blood come from? They don't know. And during Vietnam, brothers would call each other Blood because they were, they feel kin to one another. And one of our original founders in our group, his name was Bobby Jack. Another name was Gary Baker. They had came to Vietnam. So therefore, we call each other Blood because we were kin to one another. And this is where Blood come from. And the average brother on the street do not know that. This is where Blood come from. As we, and one brother helps another brother or helps a sister. But now we got the women raised in the community and raised these brothers in the community, and with the lack of male presence, the brother grew up don't want to be a strong black man. He want to be a strong black woman. And you see Atlanta's going crazy. They say gay is the new normal. And now you got these brothers. They got these brothers growing up, and they have these, they're too emotional. You say something about them, they just want to go crazy. And it's going crazy to where the brothers now are too soft. They're too soft because they're taking on to a female, the female chromosome, a female side, to where now, and then you got the mama saying, you know, saying negative things about the father, and He want to be so much like his mother, he breaks his wrist in the process. And that ain't cool. But back to the original thing, it was about helping one another. It was about building. It was about organizing, you know, helping a brother. If a brother was talented, like you, I got my younger brother, Nate. Nate is really into basketball. I mean, he works for the Golden State Warriors. He coaches Little League basketball. But his son is not the most athletic cat. So his son asked him, "Dad, I may not be able to make get a athletic scholarship." So my brother says, "Why don't you go for an academic?" Then I told my brother, "If you really look at it, the chances of a young black man going to a baseball, football, basketball team is about the same chance of winning the lotto. But his chances of becoming a doctor, lawyer, entrepreneur, engineer is about 1 in 4. Do the math. So therefore, if he's talented in that area, great. But if he's not, still push for an academic because he can become a doctor, lawyer, educator, engineer way faster or way more reachable than in being a baller of any sort. So it's about priorities, focusing, and getting somebody just to pull their coat. And now the community are scared to talk to the youth, you know, and we got to be bold, you know, grow some nuts.
Yeah.
Just talk to a young man. You know, and that's my solution. That was pretty much the format of what we came from, helping one another and protecting the community. Not being predators upon the community as we become now. Just being protected, helping out. You know, even just helping sister such and such take her groceries to here and there. You know, we knew who was who in the community.
Right.
And if you were doing something wrong, you can be checked by anybody in the community. But now, we don't have that anymore. You know, and we need to go back to our grassroots, which is brothers and sisters, and be blood of one another, because we lost that concept completely.
And I agree. And in saying that, let me just ask you, what is your greatest regret, you know, being a part of that lifestyle? What is your greatest regret? And then I want to know, what is your greatest lesson, the greatest lesson that you learned from this? What is your greatest regret for having put some of it in play? Like Aaron talked about, this generation, what they're doing is what we left behind. You know, the pain, the agony of this generation is the mistakes that we made. What is your greatest regret?
Wow, my greatest regret, it may sound crazy, but my greatest regret is when I was given a chance to join the military or police force, I should have did that and been a good cop. Now, my greatest regret is not touching enough youngsters as if I could. A lot of times I just let him wreck himself, not really stepping in.
Mm-hmm.
Not stepping in enough.
Okay. And what's your greatest lesson?
My greatest lesson is that nobody owes you nothing. I've seen so many people come in and say they cussed their girl out or they cussed their mama out because they didn't put money on their books and stuff. Or because this person didn't write them. I was like, hey, wait, whoa. You abandoned them. They didn't abandon you. And don't nobody owe you nothing. That's the most important lesson I learned, is that nobody owed me nothing in this world. And everything I get or can get or going to get is a blessing.
I agree.
How many people cuss their mamas out because their mama didn't put no money on their books or because their girlfriend didn't put no money on their books. And that's like, hey, whoa, man, is your mama out? It's like, you abandoned them. You the one that's the fun. You know, you the one got arrested. They didn't leave you. And it's just crazy. You know, it's just crazy out there. You know, I'm not going to mention her name, but it's the person who was very strong in the community as far as the Panthers go. She was helping out a youngster who got arrested in Georgia. And then I heard this youngster talk to her like she was a piece of gum on your shoe. I'm like, wow. You know, so it's a lack of discipline. It's just a lack of respect. So it's about getting the respect back. And how do you get that respect back? You got to take the respect. You know, something you do, the respect, you got to take. You got to make a earn it. You know, it's like when I was growing up, it wasn't all about, first they say what they want to say, but if they hit me, then I'll hit them back. No, my thing is, if you threaten me, and I feel that you are a danger to me, I'm going to get off first. So therefore, you judge a person's threat by their potential to carry it out. You know, it's like when brothers were saying, free South Africa, free South Africa. What did South Africa say? That means they ain't got no ticket, so they ain't got nothing to worry about. But when we got on the corporations who started divesting their funds out of South Africa, then things started changing. So therefore, we got to make people accountable, like someone spoke earlier about making people accountable and responsible. And that's one thing I learned when I was away is accountability and responsibility, and don't nobody owe me nothing.
That's awesome. And it's good to learn. Because a lot of people would walk into those situations and haven't learned anything.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I also think that...
Go ahead,
Nene. I wouldn't...
No, you go, Lisa.
I was just going to say, I also think that, you know, the lack of accountability, I think that, you know, especially a lot of times in this generation, a lot of times they think that somebody does owe them something. You know what I'm saying? They have that attitude like somebody has to do something for them, and then they don't. They don't have to do anything, especially
right.
if you're not doing anything for yourself. We were listening to my husband loves to listen to Sirius XM, and he likes talk radio. And the guy they had it was a show on, and they were talking about prisons, and they were saying that 60 or 65% of the prison population was African American. And half of them did not graduate from high school. So half of them don't even have a high school diploma. And he went on to talk and talk and talk. And I just kind of sat and thought, you know, prison is supposed to be a place where the people get rehabilitated, yada, yada, yada. But if you think about it, it just seems like they're breeding criminals. You know, they're breeding people because, first of all, they're putting them in jail so young. Even in, like, juvenile hall, they are so young where it's like you haven't really taught them anything, but you've allowed their surroundings to teach them something, you know, and it hasn't really taught them how to be effective in society. And it's very unfortunate. And then when there's programs in different communities, the first thing that gets cut off of any mayor's desk are programs for the youth or something for schools. And it's like it's backwards. How are you cutting out activities for them to do and positive things for them to venture off into, and then be upset or have something to say when they're negative or when they're destructive in the community? They have nothing to do. They have nowhere to go. You know, there's nothing positive out here. You have to search. There are programs. You got to search, but there used to be an abundance of programs, especially in the city of Detroit. Now there are a handful, you know, because those things get cut. There used to be an abundance of rec centers. Now there's just a few rec centers because when it comes down to it and they need to save money, They cut it where kids are concerned.
Right, right.
And
right.
That's ridiculous.
That's true. That's, yes. Yes. Yes, and like you said, the work center, like when we were cut, you had the rec center, you learned to do arts and crafts. You were able to put not just your physical activity out there, but some mental activity as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me attack that for a second. Back in the days, it really started out as rehabilitation, but they don't have that anymore. It's called corrections now. So they don't even stress you getting an education. Or I know in California now, and I'm glad that they have it to where you can't get your prison time credit days off your prison sentence until you have a high school diploma. So therefore, if you go in, you're going to do 100% of your time, you don't get a high school diploma. But most systems now is just bent on correction and prison industry. You got a lot of corporations that are coming into the prison who are building their industries, building their empires off of slave prison labor. And these same people who work for a company in prison, When they get out, they can't even work for that prison. They can't even work for that company as a civilian.
Right.
That's crazy. So now it's no longer rehabilitation. It's called corrections. And what correction is doing is really is a human shelving. They don't put you on the shelf until your time come out, boom. Then they put you back out there without any rehabilitation. They took away a lot of the Pell Grants, a lot of the college courses they had. They took all these away. They took all the carpentry programs, the electrician programs, plumbing programs. They took all those out. And made room for prison industry for people like IBM, Toys R Us, MSI, Toys R Us, and so on and so forth, come in and build their corporations on prison grounds and hire prisons for slave labor. And then they pretty much slave them until they leave. And then when they get out, they can't even get a job at these same companies.
But yep. That's just the thing. Yep. People don't realize that the 13th Amendment, it was great when it first came out. It was a good thing. But there's a flip side to that. It is just an amendment. You are still considered a slave if you become
right.
The property of the United States government. So if you go to jail, you are a slave because now you are their property. They can slave labor you. They can have you doing whatever it is they want you to do. And it's a lot of times, I don't think people, and I think in the schools, they reduce the amount of time they speak about Black history. And they speak about the 13th Amendment and the Constitution and things of that nature. They reduce the amount of time that they speak about these things so kids don't really realize. I don't think they really understand. And as they become older, they become adults that don't understand. That, you know, when you decide to commit a crime, and I'm not saying that if you commit a crime that you should never have a second chance because people change. And I don't think they change because of jail. I think as they get older, they change on their own. They change their mindset. They change the things that they want because people evolve. I think that's what changes people. So as they get older, then they start thinking about those type of things. But when they're younger, nobody has told them. Nobody has let them know. You know, and I think that's part of the problem as well. You know, they don't realize that slavery exists, but it only exists when you become the property of the United States government.
Right. Well, you know, the 13th Amendment does say in these United States of America, slavery is abolished unless you are duly convicted of a crime. Slavery is allowed in the United States of America when you're duly convicted of a crime. And that's right.
right there written in black and white on the 13th Amendment. You can read it. It says, in the years of the United States, slavery is abolished unless you are duly convicted of a crime.
Definitely.
But how often do they talk about that in the schools? They don't.
They
graze over it. Yeah, they graze over it. They don't really go too much into in-depth and detail into it. They don't talk about it a lot. It's hit or miss. We on it for a week, and then that's it, you know. And they don't know.
Well,
so when they
know,
get in these situations.
It's simple for them to always say, well, if you bring up slavery, that happened way back. But if you bring up something else, they're going to beat you with the Jews. And Jews, we can learn a lot of lessons from the Jewish people. They would tell you, well, as soon as you go in that the Jewish museum, the Holocaust museum says, we never forget. Should our children never forget? Should our grandchildren never forget? But they always want us to remember their Holocaust, or some other people want us to remember their tragedies. But when you bring up our tragedy, which is the worst to happen to humankind, they want you to forget about it. America still hasn't even apologized for slavery. But then I said, what is an apology from a liar?
They're not going to apologize. Because to apologize would be admitting something
that it had. It was, mm-hmm.
Right, because it opened the floodgates for reparations.
Right, you can forget about it.
Go ahead, Tony.
No, but also I was going to say slavery is also, can also exist in your mind.
Yes.
It can cripple you, and you tend to blame others for your lack of prospering.
Yeah. That's true.
Okay, I agree with that word, because we know what the physical done, but we, and everybody has sent some type of stuff, but we are the only people in the annals of history who've been robbed of our name, language, heritage, tradition, culture, collectively, to place another people in a favorable position who are still in that favorable position over to this very day. And what this has done is rendered us what? Amnesia patients. And we know an amnesia patient is someone who has lost their memory. And the only way you can make those patients or those people functional correctly is to give them back their memory. But we got lost in someone else's journey. So until we find ourselves, we'll never be able to talk with each other. We'll be able to talk at one another. So we really need to check up from the neck up. But yeah, we've been going to the wrong doctor.
Yes. And I think I have something.
Now a I used to get my bang on, and on the app get my part-time slang on. When the time for me was no joke, though, they knew I was crazy, so they labeled me loco. Had me sleeves gone past till it was 40. Low riding and tossing up a 40. Thinking in my mind that no one can handle us. The Dallas Brothers never touched Los Angeles.
Being a pimp that we are, we're here to speak of a situation that is gone too far. Here at home, it's the ghettos of L.A., where a young black girl is not promised to see the next day. Cause we used to come from the streets before we made speed. But food's just late and pray on the week. It don't depend on the color of a rag. Cause if you got what they want, you know they're gonna take what you have. Cause violence can only revolve from drugs and thugs and gangs and bang most times.
Some political bang.
Yeah, a couple of spots to get tied.
And then the government wants to see me get all this stuff. I see, ripping the microphone the way I do. Listen close, my brothers, cause I'm talking to you. The problem is we got a suicidal lifestyle. Cause 90% of us are living foul and wild. I say job, you say
bad joke. I'd rather jack another brother, watch the blood smoke.
Living in the fast lane, flipping like you're insane. You won't stop until your blood runs down the street drain.
Don't you know we got to put our heads together? Stop the fight.
Make the change.
Yo, we're not here to freak,
yeah,
because we're not ministers. We're telling it like it is, just when it trans like sinister. Reality speaks for itself when it's spoken. A face head clutch can't bring nobody for smoking. Yo, bullets flying, mothers crying, brothers dying, lying in the streets, that's why we're trying. It's stopping from falling apart and going away, and keeping the smile off a white face.
And brothers, chilling on the brothers. I thought the idea was to love one another. Open up the paper to one more death. If y'all keep me stepping, there'll be no one left. I try my best to send an example, saying hype lyrics of a hip-hop sample. Not just to brag at the most, but to inform, cause the living in the calm before the storm.
I'm in a rage.
Oh yeah? Yo, why is that, G?
Of the races, they say we act like rats in a cage. I tried to argue, but check it. Every night in the news, we prove them suckers right, and I got the blues.
America,
get busy, Humpty.
The red, the white, the blue, and the blue and the red for Christian blood, the white for who's got you doing time. Busting caps on one another.
The underground sound for peace among brothers.
Kill a black man.
What?
Yo, what are you, retarded?
Tell them, hum.
Kill them till you work for the Klan.
Do what you like.
Unless you like gang banging. Let's see how many brothers leave us hanging.
Kicking on the air about a quarter to nine. All the homies getting blind in an eight ball line. Now on this tip, they started running their lip. Jumped in the deep, took a little trip. Hit the block about 12 on the tick. The whistles went down and the nines went click. People started yelling, bodies started bailing. Bullets go flying, sending something to hell in. It's gotta stop, we don't need all the violence. Peace in the hood and I'm on the silence. We got together, not for ego or fame. We got involved, but we're all in the same game.
Last but not least, yo, Easy's no sellout. And if you can't hang in the streets, then get the hell out. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. You have your own freedom of choice who to listen to. You know good from bad, fast from far, right from wrong. Now your mother's singing that sad song.
My baby ain't never hurt nobody,
but he still got smoke at baby's party. But you're not the first or the last. You're nothing but a short story from the past. You're dead now, not number one but a zero. Take notes from Easy E, the violent hero.
That was powerful. Yes, definitely.
And
that was when you said, you had, the rappers actually getting tired of the beginnings of that violence in the streets, that violence that was beginning to take, your classmate, your father, your mother, it had gotten rampant, crack had hit the streets, and we were losing our youth at an alarming rate. It had just gotten out of control, and you had the rappers reaching back into the community and singing songs, self-destruction and different songs like that, that was bringing a higher consciousness of what are we doing to each other. And then in today's you find it where they're telling them to pop a molly, drink all you can, let it rain, smoke all you can, try to be the last one to close out the party, turn up, you know what I'm saying, instead of bringing them back to the mindset that we're destroying our communities, we're destroying generations, as you said, we're destroying ourselves. You said, it's not just homicide, it's suicide.
Suicide, right.
Yep.
you're killing generations. You know, you're cutting off that seed right there. You know, that brother will never reproduce two or three children. That'll be an added gift to our community or to the world. You know, that woman who's been cut down at 14, 15, and 16 years old because they don't have the ability to communicate how they feel. You know, you made me angry. Like I raised my children in a different area because I wanted them to have a little more diversity. I wanted them to have an opportunity to actually go outside and play because it was so bad in North New Jersey. I moved to the mountains of Pennsylvania, and then I had to come back to the inner city because of school and where my college career took me. And as soon as I got my sister, you know, she was, you know, very fair-skinned. She has the hazel eyes, very, very intelligent, used to raising her hand in class, used to interacting with the teachers because, you know, she was pretty much like the only black student in an all-white school. So it was a whole different learning environment. And then she came into the inner city, and it was so much jealousy, so much anger, instead of us being able to say, hey, there's one of us being successful. And within 2 weeks, you know, a girl attacked her, and the first thing she said to her was, you know, you should learn how to use your words, you know, and she's telling her about using her words and knowing how to communicate, but the girl was just so angry and so upset because a lot of these young girls, they're in these schools, they cannot read. They're passing the children from one grade to the next, and they can't do basic math. They can't multiply, divide, subtract. They can barely subtract and add, and they cannot read. With that No Child Left Behind law, it has put our children at such a disadvantage and such an impasse because they're passing the children right along. In eighth grade, you can't even stay back. Seventh and eighth grade, you can't even stay back. They don't even put you back. They're pushing you along. So that means you're going to go into high school not knowing how to read and write, not knowing how to properly put a math problem together. And what that does for you is it tears your confidence and self-esteem down because you're sitting in the classroom with maybe, you know, 30, 40 kids, and 10 of them are well-advised in what's going on, and the other 20 don't have a clue. So now it makes it pins them against each other. Oh, now you're a nerd. You're this, you're that, and everybody else is like an outlaw. And, you know, that violence, again, that violence, pinning the children against one another in academics and intelligence and self-esteem and pride. And that also is another thing that's tearing, you know, the community down because our children are growing up illiterate, unable to communicate, and the only way they can express themselves is through violence. And you have this world star and this, you know, this video thing that you can turn videos in of children, you know, pounding on children and fighting and all kinds of mess. And everybody's looking for that next big come up, you know, to be a part of this video world, this media fascination that perpetuates this violence on our children. And it's really sad because it's like, what can we do? What do we have to do? You know, what is going to be needed to be done to, you know, help these children? I don't know. Brother Hakeem?
Oh, yeah, I'm listening. I'm like, wow. Like I said, we have to reach out to someone who's already made it and get them to reach back. Okay, and it's not always going to happen within academia. And also, you got brothers like me who have two bachelors, but due to my failing, I can't teach. Okay, so what we have to do is go into the community. Go through the churches, go through the cultural centers, and we don't have that many cultural centers in the community like we used to. So we need to start building with self. It starts with me. It starts with you. It starts with you touching someone and just reaching out at grassroots, because this is how things get started, grassroots, one person to another person, and then reaching up, get the people who's already made it to reach down. If not, we got to do it by ourselves, because ain't nobody going to do it. Ain't nobody going to look out for our children like we are. And we're in a generation now to where, like I said, we've gotten soft. I mean, we don't even want to drink out of the water faucet anymore. I remember when we were younger, we used to try to fight to see who's going to drink out the water holes. Now everybody's drinking bottled water. So it's like going back to the basics, you know. one person to another person. You know, and it's crazy that you speak about reading. It's like I went through school. Whew, wow. I'm going to say probably up to junior high and really didn't really know how to read well until my mom saw me struggling once. She says, "You made it this far without really knowing how to read?" I'm like, "The teacher didn't care." And now they got teachers now. They just want a paycheck. They're not actually...
That's true.
They're not actually touching the children, seeing who can do what and doing it. And when I taught school, I always had an open-door policy. You can talk to me about anything without me having to worry about me telling anybody else. If you need help with this, I can help you. And now we got it to where teachers don't really care anymore. And they're going by what they see on paper, not dealing with the individual anymore. And we need to deal with each other on an individual basis, seeing who needs what, who needs help where. Why little Jimmy always falls asleep in class? How come when Sarah hears a car backfire, she jumps and can't concentrate? What's happening in the household? What's happening in the environment they're living in? All these things here make a great difference in the classroom, but a lot of teachers now don't care about that. They just want a paycheck. So it starts with grassroots.
Yes,
that's absolutely
yes,
true.
That's,
and I also think it starts in the community, though. You know, I took a sociology class. It was semester before last, and they talked about two-family homes. And I was saying that, you know, in Black communities, if we had two-family homes, it may not make a whole lot of the difference, but it would make some of the difference when you have the mom and the dad in the same home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still going to have some issues, but you're not going to have some of the things that are happening because you have the mm-hmm. guidance of both parents there. And a lot of times they make it seem like it's unimportant. And even if the mother and the father are not able to be together, that does not mean that your job as a parent is dissolved. You know, a lot of times parents get caught up in their feelings and their emotions because of what they're going on and the kids and the suffering. But within the community, we have to work together. If we as a community handle things differently, if we as a community came together instead of fighting each other, and I don't mean just gang fighting, it's always something, you know, we don't know how to be together as one. And I think Nene had talked about that previously. It's hard for us to be together as one, but if we did, things would change. Things would be a little bit more different because they would see us working together and they would see us rising. That's something that they don't want us to do. That's why they have everything the way it is, to keep us separate, to keep us not wanting to come together as one. And I think that would be something that is really needed for more things in the community to happen, more programs, different things, just to give kids and families some assistance and help and places for them to go, tutoring, all of those types of things, you know, that's needed.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You also got to realize we were bred for 400 years to distrust one another, to deal with one another. And until we can grasp that collectively in a healing process, we'll never change. But we always say it doesn't make any, it doesn't matter, or that doesn't play a great difference. But you got to remember, if you break something or you bend a pole this way, you got to bend it twice the other way to make it straight again. We've only been free, what, how many years? So we got 400 years of conditioning to distrust one another, you know, to not being able to deal with one another. So we have to start looking at this as a form of healing, and it starts in the community, in the household, grassroots.
Mm-hmm.
Each one, what's it say, each one reach one, teach one. This is where it starts. Right here. This is where it starts right here, what we're doing today. This is all where it starts.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree. Absolutely.
Yep. Now, Brother Haki, with the books that you have coming, the work that you want to share with the literary world, Because you just, without giving any spoilers, because we don't want you to spoil it for them, but just give us a little insight on your motivation of where you're taking this literature.
Well, what I got the idea of writing from a brother who was who was in prison, and he had I told him some things about my life and so on and so forth, and he said, "Man, if you change some things, you'll write some hell of a book." So I started reading a lot of books. Right, I mean, I read every top book, and the books I was reading was just really glorifying crime, glorifying on the come up. I says, wow, if I can write a book where I can put knowledge in there without being preachy or teachy, that would be the method. So when I wrote my book, I came from a personal experience of a brother who had been in the military as an officer and then joined an organization. And then from that organization started cleaning up the community and then going through a lot of stuff within this rising from a religious person to a revolutionary soldier to actually a business person and a politician. So it has all those elements of the streets, but yet with a way, is showing you a different way without being preachy and teachy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. Just finding another way, because if this is what the youth is into, even though, you know, we are very against a lot of the culture that is upon our children, if that is what they are used to, if that is what they're listening to, we have to find a medium within that to reach them.
Right.
And the things that they know, the things that they are familiar with, they will respect the man more, you know, who comes to them, you know, straight from the hip, like, yo, I lost 20, 30 years of my life.
Right.
We have a mentor program called Prodigal Sons and Daughters where we go into the prisons. And my father, he did 21 years in prison for murder. He was a political prisoner. He was one of those ones out there rah-rahing, you know, back in the day when we were trying to get those freedom, justice, and equality. And when he comes for the guys in the prison, he comes, he has on his expensive suit, he has a tie, he's clean cut. My father's a very clean cut dude. And he stands before them and he tells them his name and everything, but right behind that he says, "I'm also 58755. Which represents over 21 years in state penitentiary. And then they all sit up straight. At first they're like, "Who is this square?" He done came and got these people coming, and he starts to give them the real. Now, he sat behind the bars. He lost his mother. You know, he lost his father. He lost his children. You know, he lost his wife.
I can identify with that.
Yes, you know, he sat there, and he came to his mother's funeral in handcuffs. You know, he's able to share those things, and they're able to sit up and listen, and now they can learn. You know, I had a guy tell me when I came to teach the class that, man, I'm just in here because they told me to come down here. I don't feel like I can learn anything from a woman, but I'm going to sit here and listen, and cross his legs and sit in my class while I'm teaching it. But by the time I got done with my 12-week program, he was the most involved. He was most vocal. He had all his homework in on time and before time. And when he graduated, here he was, a man who was very, very hardcore, cried at the graduation. He actually cried when he was accepting his accolades and awards from us. And he said that I thought I couldn't learn anything from a woman, but she taught me more in those 12 weeks than I ever learned in my whole life. And I came at them with the real. You know, I came at them with what I knew, what I felt, what I had thought, what I had lost, you know, the pain and the anguish of the streets. And that's what we're going to have to do. I think that's what we're going to have to do in trying to turn some of these, what we say are wrongs, into rights in our community. We'll have to get in the trenches with them, speak their language, talk through their mediums in order to give it to them, not on a preachy level, but on a level that, giving them that wisdom, knowledge, and understanding without standing over them, pointing a finger like, you're wrong. When, like you said, people like us who were in those streets and running with those gangs and people who were committing those crimes, we left these scars. We left this hurt in the streets. We are the reason why a lot of the fathers aren't in the household or the mothers are strung out. You know, those are our faults. And because they're our faults, we have to get back in here and work with them and speak with them and talk to them like human beings and try to turn this around. It's been an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure having you on here. I'm just, you know, excited that we have, you know, men like yourself of great thought and who are now trying to come back in the community and do these things in the community to right some of what we say are these wrongs or some of these scars that we left behind. We definitely would like to have you again when we do another segment. And if you could bring, you know, any of your brothers on so that we can think about these issues and try to enlighten people and let them know that, you know, not everybody who was a part of that life promotes it or, you know, wants to see it keep going. You know, you were able to get out and maybe get education, become a family man, take a better value of life and still mentor. Like you said, you teach boxing and things like that, martial arts. Those are skills of discipline that help children to deal with anger, you know, and those internal conflicts. And that's needed. That's really, really, really needed. And we thank you for your contributions, you know, to our society. And hopefully each one of us can do a little something one by one to better this plague that's going on in our communities.
All right, thank anybody you so else? Much. It's been a plum pleasing pleasure, and I would definitely like to come back and share more about my books and myself and just life lessons that if I can make it through the cracks, anybody can.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to doing this again, okay?
Absolutely. Yes, sir, and you have a good evening. Thank you, and Ms. Tony and Ms. Alicia. Aaron has a permanent hair and makeup situation, so he's going to join us again next time. And we thank our callers. We thank our chat room. They were in there listening. A lot of people didn't press their ones, but they were on the line, you know, listening to what was going on. And we thank them for that, and we're going to keep putting this show out there so the people who didn't tune in will have an opportunity to hear the powerful message that it portrayed. Good night, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and drop that beat. Everybody have a good rest of the week. We have a show tomorrow night. We will be posting it. Leisha, what show is that tomorrow night? Is Leisha in hair and makeup? Because she might have dipped off in hair and makeup.
I'll step in for it. That's the show with Jewel Miller and his baby girl. I think her name is Harmony, if I'm not mistaken. And if I am wrong, I apologize. Yes. But that's with Jewel Miller and his baby girl tomorrow evening at 7
p.m.
You guys, can you hear me?
Yes. We hear you now, Precious. That's all right. Ms. Tony stepped in for you. We'll have our young adult author on tomorrow. She's phenomenal, and she's a good example of, you know, being able to put a good message into our society. And with that, good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us on Writing Royalty.
Good night, everybody.